And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, the 13th and concluding broadcast of our 5th anniversary series, is Brandeis by Morton Wishengrad and stars Sam Jaffe as Louis Dembitz Brandeis.
I have a story to tell you, but you cannot understand my story unless you understand this fact. And the fact is this. Every step you take toward the future leaves behind a footprint of the past. And there's no escape from the past. Nor should there be, for a man cannot escape his heritage. If it is good, he may redeem it, but no more. I know this. You must know it. In the year 1910, in the 54th year of his life, Louis Dembitz Brandeis knew it also. What are the things a man may not forget? I say to you that I may not forget that I am pursued by the Middle Ages, like a neurotic haunted by a phantom dream. My days are warm with the memory of 3,000 years of civilization, but my sleep is fitful with the cry of 2,000 years of persecution. And both by day and by night, I am a Jew. And this is a fact sealed in my flesh like the covenant of Abraham. Now I shall tell you the story. On a day more than 35 years ago in the city of Boston, I sat in the offices of the firm of Brandeis, Dunbar, and Nutter and listened to a man with blue eyes talk to two visitors.
Mr. Kelly, what is your grievance? Why do the shoe workers threaten this strike against my client, Mr. Williams?
It's pretty simple, Mr. Brandeis. The men can't live on what they get.
Williams, is that true?
Now you're my lawyer, Brandeis. You know I pay my men $18 a week. For these times, it's not a bad wage.
We ain't denying that, Mr. Williams. It ain't a bad wage.
You do admit that, don't you?
We admit it, sure.
Then why do you want a strike?
We want more money, that's why.
Brandeis, I told you there was no point in asking him here. The workers are unreasonable, absolutely unreasonable.
Mr. Kelly, let's be clear about this. You admit that Mr. Williams pays a decent wage.
I asked in the business, sure.
Yet you want more. Aren't you being a little unfair?
No, sir. Ask him about the two long slack seasons when the men are laid off.
Are there slack seasons, Mr. Williams?
Naturally, it's a seasonal industry.
But we don't live seasonal. We live 52 weeks, same as you. Average our fancy pay over the year, and what do we get?
Mr. Williams, I'd like your figures on seasonal layoff.
Now, look here, Brandeis. I'm a manufacturer, not a settlement house worker.
Don't you think Mr. Kelly has a point to what he's saying?
Well, then you tell him my point. You're my lawyer. I pay you, not him. And don't forget that little thing.
I haven't forgotten it, sir. But wouldn't it be rather an unfortunate thing for a lawyer to advocate something which he can't approve as a citizen?
Now, listen, I hired a lawyer, not a citizen.
Perhaps, Mr. Williams, when you hired me, you hired both.
Who did I, though?
Yes, Mr. Williams. I think perhaps you did.
All right, Mr. Citizen. You just go right ahead and sit behind this desk. Me, I'm going out and get me a lawyer.
Well, Mr. Brandeis, you talk mighty funny for a conservative.
Funny? I don't think so. There was a time when the working relationship was between master and servant. Today it's between employer and employee. All I want is to make both employer and employee partners. Partners to a contract.
That's still pretty radical for Mr. Williams.
So are Isaiah and Amos, Mr. Kelly. That gives me an idea. Excuse me, Mr. Kelly.
Right ahead.
Yes, Mr. Brandeis.
Have you finished my holiday list?
Yes, I have, sir.
Please add another item, will you? A book.
Of course, sir. For the children?
No, for Mr. Williams.
Yes, sir.
Inscribe my compliments, and please send him a copy of the Bible.
Whitman, suppose you do the talking.
All right, Abbott. Mr. Brandeis, a number of Boston businessmen have organized a committee. A committee that needs some legal advice in a hurry.
Yes?
I believe your firm represents the Great American Assurance Society.
Yes, we handle their local matters.
Do you know much about them, Mr. Brandeis?
A good deal. Why?
Abbott and I are policyholders. Pretty big policyholders. Abbott, tell Mr. Brandeis what you found.
Something pretty dirty. A few of the vice presidents have formed a syndicate, and they're buying securities with treasury funds.
If the securities are sound, I don't see what's wrong.
Oh, the securities are sound enough. What's wrong, though, is that they're buying the securities for themselves.
Can you prove that?
Look at this. Sworn affidavits.
They're using other people's money, aren't they?
Brandeis, we know you represent the company. We're asking now if you want to represent us against the company.
Mr. Brandeis, if this embarrasses you as a lawyer, why, tell us.
It's embarrassing, all right. I'm embarrassed to be the company's lawyer.
Then you'll take this case?
I'll be glad to, Mr. Whitman.
Fine. We're prepared to give you a retainer of $10,000.
No, Mr. Whitman.
Well, they told us you were a good businessman. We'll make it $15,000.
You don't understand. I'll take the case, but without fee. This isn't a private matter. And I don't think I have a right to charge the public for my services.
Well, we can afford to pay, Mr. Brandeis.
All right, Whitman. I'll take half of what you're getting from this.
Well, I'm getting nothing.
Good. I'll take half of that.
Mr. Brandeis, I think I know now why your friends call you a liberal.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Abbott, what do my enemies call me?
What do you suppose, Mr. Brandeis?
You tell me.
Why, Mr. Brandeis? They call you a Jew.
Louis Demditz Brandeis smiled. To be called a Jew was amusing. Had not Uncle Louis Demditz been one of the three men in 1860 to nominate Abraham Lincoln for president? Had he not himself, as a young man, sat at the feet of Emerson and Lowell? He was the man consulted by presidents, the friend of Oliver Wendell Holmes and William Allen White, and a college president called Woodrow Wilson. Yes, it was amusing to call this tall, slender, blue-eyed man a Jew. His synagogue was the court of law. His scriptures were legal precedents. His altar was social justice. Louis Brandeis smiled a puzzled smile and then dismissed the incident. It kept recurring.
Congratulations, Mr. Brandeis. You certainly made them crawl back into the woodwork.
I believe I did, Mr. Whitman. There's a good deal of fun in being a public servant, isn't there?
Maybe. Well, anyhow, you got yourself some free publicity in the Tribune. Here, listen to this. Brandeis possesses the rare knowledge of knowing when to stop. When he has exasperated his opponents to the limit of their endurance, he grows gentler than a suckling dove. I'm sorry, Mr. Brandeis.
It's quite all right, Mr. Whitman. Read on.
Well, let's forget it.
Please, read the rest of it.
All right. Gentler than a suckling dove, and more persuasive than a second-hand clothes dealer trying to sacrifice himself to give you a bargain. That's pretty low, Mr. Brandeis.
My friends call me a liberal. And apparently those who aren't my friends call me a Jew. If you'll excuse me, Mr. Whitman, I think I'll have to talk to my friend Philene about this. Philene, have you got a ready definition of a Jew?
Hmm?
Yes, I seem to be in need of a definition.
Well, I don't know who the philosopher was, but someone is alleged to have said that a Jew is like everybody else, only more so.
Philene, I think I ought to meet some Jews.
Now, that's a real coincidence, Brandeis. How would you like to go to New York and arbitrate a labor dispute?
I wouldn't. I've got my hands full fighting the railroad trust. What's the coincidence about the New York thing?
Now, you've heard of the ILGWU. That's quite a mouthful. It stands for the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union.
What about them?
The New York cloakmakers are on strike. It happens that many of the workers and employers are Jewish.
Well?
Well, that's your chance to find out something about the Jews. The situation shrieks for an arbitrator.
It might be interesting at that.
You called, Mr. Brandeis?
Yes. Please ask Mr. Dunbar if he wouldn't mind taking my notes and dictating the rest of my Ballinger-Glavis brief. I'm going to New York.
You see, Mr. Brandeis, in the union it's a real democracy. Everybody wants to talk, nobody wants to listen.
Mr. Dikey, if you have no objection, I'd like one of the shop chairmen to present the case.
Moskowitz, tell Mr. Brandeis.
It's very simple, Mr. Brandeis. All we want is a contract and union recognition.
I thought you were striking for higher wages and the elimination of sweatshop conditions.
Naturally, but the union comes first.
But suppose I were able to get an increase for you. Would you turn that down?
Look, Mr. Brandeis, my own boss isn't a bad fellow. He came to America on the same boat with me, but that doesn't make him Santa Claus. Today he feels generous, so he gives us a raise. Tomorrow his wife burns the coffee and he gives us a cut. Excuse me, Mr. Brandeis. We want a union.
That's a consensus, Mr. Brandeis. You can tell that to the employers.
Brandeis, what the workers want is absolutely out of the question.
Then you refuse to sign a contract?
We refuse to recognize the union. Settled.
That's too bad. I'm afraid the strike will continue.
Between me and you, Mr. Brandeis, I don't want the others to hear this. Maybe if I were a worker, I'd continue with the strike.
You?
Don't you think I was once a worker? Why do you think I became an employer? Conditions in this industry are terrible.
I'm really amazed. I thought I'd heard all the answers. But this one is absolutely new.
The trouble with you, Mr. Brandeis, you were born in Kentucky. Go back and tell those idiots they can strike until they're blue in the face. In Yiddish, there's another way to say it, but you tell it to them in English.
We'll stay out, Mr. Brandeis.
Look here, you can't. Some of your people are literally starving.
If it was just for hours and wages, we'd go back tomorrow. But this is a principle. When I was a young fellow in Kishinev, I used to study the Talmud. When I came to America, I found the word I studied. They call it democracy.
Is that what the Talmud is about, Mr. Moskowitz?
Well, they call it something else, but that's what it's about. You know, Mr. Brandeis, it's a shame. A smart man like you should learn a little Hebrew.
I think it is a shame. Someday, perhaps someone like you should teach me.
Free of charge. If you want a small lesson, here it is. Look, I'm writing. That's Hebrew.
It looks like a dentist's chart.
It spells a word. I'll say it for you. Tzedek.
Tzedek. What does it mean?
Justice and righteousness. Now, here's another word. Tzedakah. It comes from the word for justice.
Tzedakah. I see.
And it means charity. Now, that's a wonderful thing, Mr. Brandeis. In the Hebrew language, the word for charity comes from the word that means justice and righteousness. Now, please go back to those fine bosses of ours and tell them for us a little less tzedakah and a little more tzedek.
Mr. Brandeis, don't believe anything that Moskowitz says. At night, he's studying to be a lawyer.
What is Mr. Moskowitz during the day?
He thinks he's an operator. Between you and me, he's a botcher. It'll be a fine day for my business when he gets his diploma.
What I can't understand is why your association refuses to negotiate. There's such an extraordinary amount of hostility on both sides, and yet there seems to be so much kinship and understanding.
You know something, Mr. Brandeis? When two people are enemies, it's not such a terrible tragedy. But when they're enemies because they both want the same thing, then it is a tragedy. Please go back and see if you can talk some sense into those crazy lunatics.
Mr. Moskowitz, a wise man knows when to yield.
With the greatest satisfaction, Mr. Brandeis. Tell him Moskowitz says he can be a wise man. I give him the honor. Let him yield.
This is the most extraordinary strike I've ever known. It's like a passage from the Talmud with both sides trying to write a commentary.
Mr. Brandeis, I have a little boy. Papa, he says, what's democracy? Sonny, I tell him, democracy's in the classroom. In the store where Mama buys tomatoes, and the Board of Aldermen, and the polling place. But for 10 hours a day, it's not in the shop. The boss doesn't have time for it. Please, Mr. Brandeis, tell him the shop is on East Broadway. East Broadway is in New York, and New York is still in America.
And so you see, I'm a little tired of being an intermediary. I've brought you both together.
Like old times, eh, Moskowitz?
The association has approved an increase. Hours will be out cut. Shop sanitation will be improved. Mr. Moskowitz, I think these are generous concessions.
They are, Moskowitz. We're willing to do whatever we can.
What's the catch?
Uh-huh, see? 1 year of law school already wants to know what's the catch. That's what they teach in law school.
Mister, I know you from the old country. What's the catch?
The association will yield on all demands except union recognition.
Of course. They want to build a fine house for us. The only thing they don't want is that the house should have a foundation.
Moskowitz, don't be a stubborn mule.
Mr. Brandeis, he goes to the synagogue. Let him tell me if the words are only for Saturday or if he's supposed to practice them every day.
But he does see these things. I think he's making substantial concessions.
Of course.
It's a regular merry-go-round. We want a union. We want a contract. That comes first.
Mr. Moskowitz, I think you're right about this. I recognize it as a lawyer and as an American.
You can say also as a Jew.
On whose side are you arguing?
Since it's going to cost me money, I'll argue on both sides.
Then you're willing to come to terms?
Maybe, but I'll have to talk to the other employers.
Good. It's not a pleasure to be on strike.
Listen, you Talmudist, you've said enough. Mr. Brandeis, look at him. Do you think he's the only one who can speak a little Hebrew? Maybe I can quote a little, too. Zion b'mishpot tipodeh.
Zion b'mishpot tipodeh.
Don't break your teeth, Mr. Brandeis. Zion b'mishpot tipodeh. Zion will be redeemed through righteousness.
Now, Moskowitz, Moskowitz, with a head like yours, couldn't you be a better operator and not such a botcher?
There it is, gentlemen. This is the first collective agreement with enforcement machinery in it. I think it's a fine day's work. Gentlemen, I've learned something from you both. I'm 54 years old. All my life I've worked for something I call justice, social justice. I came here with curiosity, and I found that beneath all the bickering and the controversy and the passion, that there was something the preachers call brotherhood. And I found its expression, perhaps you may not accept this, but I found it expressed in terms of Judaism. For someone like myself, who hardly considered himself a Jew, that means a good deal.
This was a beginning for Louis Dembitz Brandeis. In the 54th year of his life, an idea burgeoning in a great man's mind. A man thinking, applying the scientific method, mixing, compounding, testing the idea, formulating a concept in the crucible of his conscience. Truly, is not this the spark of divinity that makes man only slightly less than the angels? And because he was not a closet speculator, because he was a man of action, he made his decision.
Philine.
Yes?
I seem to have suddenly discovered a heritage.
Yes?
I want to be worthy of the Jewish name. It isn't wealth, it isn't station. No, nor honor, nor ambition. None of those things. It's like seeing a vision, knowing that what is mean is not for us, knowing that we must speak again for social justice and for righteousness, like Holmes. I would say that self-respect demands that we live not only honorably, but worthily.
But Brandeis, this is what you've tried to be all your life.
Yes, as an American. All my life I've heard people speak of Americanism and Judaism as separate from each other. I know now it is not so. Place the pattern of Americanism over Judaism. Philemon, they match. A Jew is an American, in the best and the truest, in the deepest, richest sense of the word. And Philemon, it makes me very proud.
What man alive has never held up a mirror to his own conscience and said to himself, "This is what I truly believe. These are the things I will not compromise. These are the banners I must carry. Without them, I have no integrity." In the summer of 1910, these ideas came to Louis Dembitz Brandeis. The ideas came. He held them in the pan of his brain. He kneaded them like dough. He placed them in the oven of his heart to bake. And when months later a rabbi came to him and spoke of Palestine, Brandeis answered,
"I'm an American, Rabbi."
"So am I, Mr. Brandeis. We are trying to found a refuge in Palestine for Jews who have no other land, the Jews of Middle Europe and Eastern Europe."
Can I as an American support such a project?
"Because you are an American, Mr. Brandeis."
"Rabbi, I've begun to feel that to be a better American, I must become a better Jew."
"Carry it further, Mr. Brandeis. I hold that to be a good Jew, you must help to fulfill the prophetic vision for the Holy Land."
"Perhaps you're right, Rabbi. But I shall have to consider it carefully. If Palestine is to have any validity, it cannot be just another small state like the small duchy of Luxembourg or another Montenegro. It must have a purpose greater than nationalism."
"Yes, it can have that. With the help of men like yourself, I know that it must."
In the 58th year of his life, virtually in the hour when President Woodrow Wilson summoned him to the Supreme Court of the United States to take his place alongside Oliver Wendell Holmes, Louis Dembitz Brandeis, jurist, moralist, liberal, Jew, American, accepted the cause of Zionism and became its leader in America. And he spoke with the words of Ahad Ham.
"I live for the sake of the perpetuation and happiness of the community of which I am a member. I die to make room for new individuals who will mold the community afresh. When the individual thus values the community as he values his own life and strives after its happiness as though it were his individual well-being, he finds satisfaction and no longer feels so keenly the bitterness of his individual existence because he sees the end for which he lives and suffers. I am an American. And I've come to Zionism through Americanism. Let it be for what the prophets spoke. Let it be only that. Sion, Bemishpat, Tipodeh. Zion will be redeemed through righteousness."
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Miss Susan Brandeis, daughter of Justice Louis D. Brandeis and former member of the Board of Regents of the State of New York. Miss Brandeis.
"Now that you have heard a dramatic presentation of some parts of my father's life, I should like to tell of his manner of living, What he meant to many of us Americans who lived from 1900 to 1941 especially. As a practicing lawyer, he early was called the people's attorney because of his help to labor unions and many little people. In other words, taking the very unpopular side of important controversies. As a citizen of Boston, for instance, he used his skill and courage to bring about lower gas rates for his fellow citizens by obtaining a fair and equitable contract for gas. To Zionist affairs, he devoted much time and led the American effort for the creation of the State of Israel, though he did not live to see it established. Very many sides of the life of Mr. Justice Brandeis were outstanding, and yet it is his character which will make him remembered for all time. His personal handling of all human relationships, whether business, civic, or social, was equally successful and brilliant. As with many of our prophets, it was not given to my father to enter the promised land. It should be known that he never wavered in his belief that the goal of Zionism would be achieved. He said in an address more than 40 years ago, "Look courageously into the future, be it far or near. Then you will not doubt, and you will feel that no effort is too great."
Thank you, Miss Brandeis. Eternal Light drama today was Brandeis, written by Morton Wishengrad, and starred Sam Jaffe as Louis Dembitz Brandeis. The music was composed and conducted by Morris Mamorski. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. The production was under the direction of Frank Papp. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.